This is All Football Commentators Are Geeks with Michelle Owen, Alex Crook and Sam Matterface.
Hello and welcome to the eagerly awaited latest instalment of All Football Commentators Are Geeks with me, Michelle Owen from Sky Sports and Soccer Saturday.
Sam Matterface from TalkSport and ITV Sport.
Alex Crook from TalkSport and National NewsHound.
Coming up this week, our guest geek is the Evening Standard's digital sports correspondent, Vaishali Bhardwaj.
I've never really identified myself as I'm a woman and I'm from an ethnic background and I'm going to this press box. I'm a sports journalist, yeah. I've never thought, you know, oh, how will it affect me? I suppose I did notice it quite early on when other people reacted to me, like, you know, eyebrows raised, oh, who's this?
And Sam will be taking us behind the scenes at Chelsea's training ground and revealing why Cesar Azpi has been the subject of ribbing from his teammates.
And it was nothing to do with the defensive disaster that they had on Saturday. I also witnessed one of the more bizarre kickoff delays involving Neymar and the entire Brazilian team, so I'll be telling you about that.
And we'll also be discussing why sometimes commentators are damned if we do and damned if we don't when it comes to pronouncing names, after I discovered Nathan Ake is actually Nathan Ake, following Bournemouth's defeat to Arsenal.
All that on the podcast that thinks Harry Redknapp is already king of the jungle. All football commentators are geeks. Well, it seems like an age, guys, since we were last together. Yes. As Crook and I enjoyed our own international break while Sam was busy beavering away, as Chris Kamara would say, back home. I've missed you guys a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, we missed you too. Well, Sam, not so much.
Hold on a second. You were on your second honeymoon with your wife. Did she go, didn't she? She did go.
There was enough photos, guys. Come on.
Yeah. No. And you missed Michelle more than you missed one of your oldest friends. I think that's a little bit weird.
I've replaced you, Sam.
While Crook was soaking up the sun in paradise and Michelle was being romanced in Paris, I was sat freezing half to death at Stadium MK.
Oh, so glamorous.
I know.
More on that later. But of course, the Premier League did wing back into action this weekend as City and Liverpool strolled to victory. Tottenham gave Chelsea a reality check and United toiled at home again. And Fulham won a game. So let's take a look at the main headlines in numbers.
Tottenham brought Maurizio Sarri's unbeaten run as Chelsea manager to a juddering halt, topping their London rivals 3-1. It is their first back-to-back league wins against Chelsea since 1987. Michelle, were you even born then?
No.
Michael Jackson's I Just Can't Stop Loving You was number one that day in 1987, by the way.
That is the geekiest of geekiest fact.
Mm. I appeared two years later.
Okay.
So, Crook, you'll love this one. Manchester United were held to a goalless draw at home by lowly Crystal Palace. I couldn't believe that one. It was the 65th goalless draw the Red Devils have been involved in since the Premier League began. And do you know what? More than 31% of those have been since Sir Alex Ferguson retired. And a little tease for you. I've got something more on that in Stat or Spin.
Getting back in that dugout. You really know how to depress me. Elsewhere, Alexander Mitrovic ended his goal drought with a brace to give Claudio Ranieri a winning start as Fulham manager as they beat Surrey Southampton 3-2. Only Sergio Aguero has more Premier League goals this season than the Serbian, who has also been on fire in the Nations League.
Maybe he is, as Claudio Ranieri has claimed, one of the best strikers in Europe, after all. We've seen lots of headlines over the past few days about the postponement of the Copa Libertadores final. Sam, you covered Brazil during the international break and your match was actually delayed, wasn't it? But it was for very different reasons.
Yes, that South American Champions League final has caused all sorts of interest, hasn't it, over the last week or so. But I had a really busy 14 days, actually, since we last spoke. Northern Ireland's latest disappointment. Yeah, right. Yeah, we're going to the bar and back. The Croatia-Spain cracker. The Spurs spanking of Chelsea at the weekend, which Sarri predicted in his Friday press conference, which I went to as well. And two Brazil games. The first one was at the Emirates. And you know, it was interesting. It was live on ITV4. I did the world feed as well, so it was going all around the world. And the presenter threw to me at what was the appointed time, which was 19:53 GMT, 7 minutes to eight in old money. With the expectation of like a little intro from me, the national anthems, and then a kickoff at 8 o'clock. 7 minutes in total, with 3 minutes of anthems. That's 4 minutes of Matterface waffling. Only they didn't kick off at 8 o'clock at all. Couple of minutes passed, no chance. Eventually, they started the game of football at 9 minutes past eight. I had been waffling for 16 minutes on my own. Now, the reason, traffic delay? Nah. Kit issue? Nah. The Brazil players had decided that this was the moment to indulge in a spot of group prayer.
No way. So this is all happening in the Emirates?
Yep, in the dressing room at the Emirates Stadium. And they were waiting desperately for them to come out and get involved in the game. A Uruguay are in the tunnel for 10 minutes. And I'm using almost all of my notes before we've even kicked off. And they would not be disturbed. The floor manager's gone up, ratcheted on the old dressing room door. And like someone's come to the door and said, they're praying, go away. Go away, they're praying. Anyway, it was really cold as well. The referee had previously limited the pre-match activity because he didn't want the players getting injured, so he didn't want them to get too cold. So eventually, when he does come out, they do come out of the tunnel. All of the Brazilians come out, single file, and we wait for another 2 minutes for Neymar.
Neymar, I knew you were going to say Neymar. I didn't want to say it.
Of course, because he has to go down and shake everyone's hand and then be the last out. He did the same thing on Tuesday night when it was about minus 33 and I had about five layers of thermals on and I was cuddling up to Leon Osman in order to stay warm. Neymar done the same thing again, made us wait so that he could be the last out, shaking everyone's hands, made a grand entrance and then pulled his groin 6 minutes in. 30,000 had turned up to see him and if they turned up late, they'd have missed him.
Have you ever come across this before, Sam? I mean, you've done international tournaments and different countries have different cultures, but I have never heard of this kickoff being delayed because of this.
They do what they like, the Brazilians, I think. I mean, it's very different in terms of the tournaments that I've done, FIFA, UEFA, everything's to the minute and it's all timed. You get a running order. They'll be at 17:58 or whatever it is, and they will be there. There's no messing around. And anyone's late for whatever reason, it all goes off and there's fines going in. But this is a Brazilian friendly on the Brazil Global Tour. They can do what they want and they do.
Just on the subject of prayer rooms, do you remember when Portsmouth set up a prayer room in the laundry room? Literally, where the kit man was washing the kit. You had Lamana Luwalua, Sol Campbell, Jermaine Defoe. Just used to congregate in there before matches, you know, literally while the machines were spinning around.
Interesting. Have you ever been on that tour that goes around the Camp Nou, the Barcelona Stadium?
Yes, I've been on that one, and they've got the prayer room. They've got the little chapel, haven't they, in the tunnel? It's really pretty.
Right next to the entrance to the tunnel. It's amazing. And it's, as you say, so ornate, so decorative. It's a proper prayer room. That's a proper chapel.
But I guess, Sam, what made that so much worse for you was the fact that it was absolutely freezing. We've all been there, haven't we, when you can't feel a thing. But I guess, at least for you guys, what I will say is the beauty and the joy of being on radio is no one can see what you look like. Yeah. But if you remember last season...
Definitely a bonus in my case.
Well, I wasn't saying anything. But when we had the Beast from the East last season, you know, genuinely, it was probably like minus 10 on a gantry. Mm. And I had my hat on. They were like, you got to take your hat off. I was like, what? They're like, well, we don't wear hats on Soccer Saturday. We just don't. Oh, I was so cold. Thank goodness for the headphones at least. But I can fit probably about six layers on me. I mean, I look about 2 stone heavier, but it's worth the hit.
Crook, can you get 2 stone's worth of clothing on you?
Do you know what? I actually don't wear a lot of clothing of football, even on...
You probably don't need it.
But do you know what I am going to buy? This is amazing. I was in the tunnel at Bournemouth on Sunday after the Arsenal game, and there was a Norwegian television reporter. We're going to hear more about him later. And he was talking about these electric socks that he was wearing. Now, I've never come across these before. I don't think you have either, Sam, and you're all over all mod cons. So basically, they're a pair of socks that you charge up for a couple of hours before the game and they stay heated for the entirety of the afternoon.
You got the link.
We all need a pair of those.
I need some. Who can we get to give us some?
You must have got the link.
Why?
No, I didn't.
You didn't get like the name of them or anything to spread this love for electric socks. I mean,
no, I assume if you just Google electric socks, then all kinds of different ones will come up, no?
I'm not sure how many websites actually trade in electric socks, so you're probably quite right. It's a narrow market.
I don't think it is. I'm going to chip in here because I know the Exeter City press officer has USB gloves that he plugs into his laptop when he's typing. And I'm pretty sure that Lee Johnson at Bristol City has a gilet that is warmed up by plugging it in.
Yeah, you can get those. Danny Higginbottom's got one of those.
Yes, he has. Danny Higginbottom has got one as well. Yeah, so I need to get into this market.
You do. I had a brilliant 2 days down at the Chelsea training facility this week as well, which was brilliant. I did a TV show with Eden Hazard, Athbilicueta.
That's cool.
And William. We'll get on to pronunciations and names a little bit later on. And then I did an interview with Sarri and Pedro. Sarri had said that he actually didn't think that mentally the group was right and that their attitude and approach wasn't focused enough. And after the weekend, when I spoke to him on Saturday night after the game, he said, now everyone's going to believe me. I thought they were really relaxed being around them this week. And maybe that was one of the issues. It's an amazing facility. It's got like an underground gym, an underground pool, a huge matrix of football pitches. Really impressed. I got to go in the kit room with Ricky, the kit man, and had a look at the boot oven. Yeah, there's a boot oven.
What?
Yeah. You were talking about your electric...
Is that for stretching them?
It's for softening up the leather.
Yeah.
But as Eden Hazard said to me was, it's for the Brazilian boys to keep their toes warm.
What was, just quickly, so I'm fascinated to know, what was Hazard like as a person? Because I think football's personalities, you know, they're also media trained. Perhaps we don't always get the best out of them. So how did you find him?
He's brilliant. He was really good company. And actually, I did think that it was going to be difficult. I don't think he really wanted to stay until the appointed time and wait for me to waffle on for a bit. But he did. And do you know what? He was great to be around. He's very funny. He's a very funny guy. He's relaxed. He spends most of his time away from football with his three kids. He told me he was a very good chef, although when I asked him what his delicacy was and his best dish, he did say Belgian Fritz and beer. So I'm not sure about that, but
sounds all right to me.
He was a good laugh. Actually, one of the best stories that came out of it was when David Luiz sent in a video to the show and asked Hazard, "Why are you so fat?" Which caused a bit of hilarity. I asked Athbilicueta actually if there was something going on between him and Alvaro Morata, because he only ever seems to assist goals for Morata. Ironically, then at the weekend he makes one for Giroud right at the end of the game. But Eden Hazard and Willian, who were on this program with me, were laughing their heads off, and they were like, they love each other, they're so into each other, everything's about, well, there's a Spanish connection, this and that. It's good that they've got that sort of relaxed atmosphere. I just wonder whether or not whether the focus that Sarri was talking about sort of also came out in those couple of days.
Yeah, I just think actually we saw from that game that Chelsea are probably in a false position, and they're still some way behind Tottenham and certainly behind the top two.
I don't think we're surprised by that.
I'll tell you what I was surprised by. Was I surprised? Maybe not. So I was in the tunnel at Brighton on Saturday. Brighton won, Leicester won. Not a bad game, actually. Leicester showed great character to come back with 10 men after James Maddison had been sent off for the worst dive you'll ever see. And Jamie Vardy, it was quite funny, actually. He was asked to do an interview by Sky Sports, and normally you think, well, he's not going to turn that down. He did, because he'd already done 2 television interviews, and this would have been number 3. And he turned to the Leicester press officer and he said, "You can't expect me to do 3 when you've told me it's only 2. So he point blank refused to do one with Sky.
No. I'm really disappointed about this, because have you read Jamie Vardy's book, either of you?
No.
No.
If you, well, we all know the story, don't we? And it's going to be made into a Hollywood film. But considering where he's come from... Mm. Like, I just wouldn't expect that from him, given, you know, he knows what it's like to sort of, I guess, have nothing as a footballer and to be where he is now. People want to hear from him. People want to talk to him.
I don't believe that this film is going to be as good as Bohemian Rhapsody, the story of Queen.
Oh.
I'm just telling you. I'm just throwing it out there.
Well, he was being a bit of a queen there.
I don't know if you've seen it, Michelle. It is outstanding.
I have not.
Me and Crook love it.
Superb film.
I'm going to have to go and see it for the purpose of the podcast, aren't I?
And while we're talking about the big screen, what about the small screen? How good is Harry Redknapp on I'm a Celebrity? He's going to win it, isn't he?
I love him. I wish he was my granddad.
I mean, Sam and I have seen the Harry charm over a number of years. He does have in his locker to turn. when things aren't going his way and when someone annoys him. But he's keeping that under wraps at the moment, isn't he?
He is. He's handled it very well. I don't even watch that programme, but I'm watching it this year just because I'm so intrigued about how he comes across. It's brilliant. It really is.
Right, you are listening to the All Football Commentators at Geeks podcast. So remember, you can follow us on Instagram or get in touch with us via Twitter. The handles are exactly the same. We are at AFC Geeks. Send us your questions and we will answer as many of them as we can in the next episode.
Tweet the Geeks at AFC Geeks or get in touch on Instagram.
Right, let's play Stat or Spin.
Lift off and the clock has started.
Yes, indeed, let's play Stat or Spin. I'll kick us off. Roberto Firmino is sure to start for Liverpool against PSG on Wednesday, even though his goal on Saturday was only his second in 15 games for club and country. And as well as his all-round work rate and effectiveness, this is why. His 12 European Cup goals for Liverpool are as many as were managed by Michael Owen and Pep Guardiola, if you stick them together. The same number as Everton Football Club have ever managed. The number you get if you add all of the European goals of Philippe Coutinho and Kevin Keegan or Dennis Bergkamp and Ruud Gullit. Is that Stat or Spin?
Wow. There's some big names in there, but given that's so specific and you've got additions going on as well, I think that's a stat.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Michelle, I'm going to say stat.
Oh, well, funnily enough, it is a stat. It is. He has scored as many goals in the European Cup for Liverpool as Everton have ever managed, but they haven't really played too much European Cup football, which is probably the reason for that. And the same for sort of Michael Owen, really, as well. And Pep Guardiola was a defensive midfield player. Okay, what you got for us, Crook?
And Dennis Bergkamp refused to fly, didn't he? Mine is Arsenal-related. Actually, I was at Arsenal-Bournemouth on Sunday. I spoke to Rob Holding. Got a great line out of him, actually, on TalkSport. I asked him, what's the difference between this Arsenal and last year's Arsenal? And he basically said that this year they've got a winning mentality and they're better tactically organised. Doesn't say
However,
much for Arsene Wenger, does
that,
it?
They were fourth this time last year under Arsene Wenger and they're fifth this year. So, you know, let's not get carried away.
That's my stat or spin.
Oh, no way.
Oh, move on then. Michelle, what have you got?
Right, my crook is about your beloved Manchester United. And we touched on it earlier, didn't we, about the goalless draws they've had since Alex Ferguson left. Now, if we talk about the big six and the Premier League goalless draws they've had, Manchester United have had the most out of the big six. The big six being United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester City and Tottenham Hotspur. They have had seven more goalless draws than Chelsea and Liverpool, who are next on the list. Is that stat or spin?
They've definitely had more because those two teams don't really do as many in the recent past. So I'm going to say that's probably
seven more.
That, but I don't know if it's seven. So I'm going to. I think you've probably tried to throw in a dummy here because you've been away for a week. Spin.
Why are you so horrible?
I'm going to say stat. I think United have had 10 nil-nil draws under Jose Mourinho.
Okay, so Manchester United have actually had 20 goalless draws since the start of 2013-14. But Chelsea and Liverpool have had 14, so the difference was six, so it's spin.
I knew you were going to try and throw one in. I knew you were going to try and
I'm
throw
just so
one
crazy.
In.
So there we are. Right, if you like the podcast, make sure you rate and review it on iTunes and subscribe via podcast supplier. Next up, Sam will be speaking to Vishali Badwaj from the London Evening Standard.
This week, we sent Sam to speak to one of our industry's rising stars, Vishali Badwaj, who has gone from her own YouTube channel to being a guest on Sky Sports Sunday Supplement in just 5 years.
So in terms of what I'm doing now, I am a digital sports correspondent for the Evening Standard, but the role has changed massively in the 4 years that I've been there. Before that, I was freelancing, kind of working my way into the field because I've got no family or friends who work in the field. So for me, it was very much me on my own, learning the trade. And I started off really on websites, so working in print media
and writing, but I've begun to do so much more broadcasting, because that's essentially what I think the field is demanding of writers now. You've got to not be able to just write, but you have to be on camera. So that means everything from social media videos for the Evening Standard. So when I'm at games, I'll do Periscopes, I'll do Facebook Lives, I'll do analysis videos, to videos with players. I'll film my own videos, interviews with players, to all the sort of traditional media reporting stuff. So that's match reports, blogs. So it's really very much a variety of things that I do now for the Evening Standard. And, you know, I don't just even cover London football now. I was at the Manchester Derby recently. Yeah. So now the role's expanded massively to kind of cover all Premier League teams.
And that's because of the rise of digital media, isn't it? And the way that we as football correspondents now have to cover football. So there has to be that sort of almost multi-platform ability for everyone who works in it. But your profile's gone very high very quickly, hasn't it? I mean, you've now been doing Sunday Supplement, you've been doing Talk Sports stuff, you've been doing Premier League television, lots of different bits and pieces.
Yeah, I've always been open to doing broadcasting. I think I always had a fascination with broadcasting, the way that it's so different how you relay a story when you're writing it to when you're speaking about it, and then when you're on TV. And I've always loved the way you have to change yourself when you're on camera to when you're on radio. So I've always embraced it. And one of the things I did early on was I started a YouTube channel. I started it years ago, but I didn't really take it seriously until about 3 years ago.
I've seen it. I've been on it. I looked at it yesterday and was looking at the... the change as well, because you've done lots of videos with 6 years old. And then
not
there's
very
one,
good ones.
Yeah, they were. And then recent ones, and it's interesting to see the sort of way it's developed over that time.
Yeah, I kind of used it as a kind of journalistic diary, as it were. So early on, I was just kind of seeing what worked, what people wanted to see, and then as I started to go to more matches, how I could kind of show how my life is as a journalist to fans. Mm. So not just talking about the games, but also showing them behind the scenes, and I found that fans really liked that. But it was interesting because it was actually my work on YouTube which alerted producers to the fact that not only am I a writer, but actually I can and I'm happy to speak on TV. And that's where I think the Sunday Supplement first call up came last year, and then from that really opened the doors to so many more opportunities which I've taken.
Was that a daunting experience, was it, going on Sunday Supplement for the first time? Because it, obviously for someone who hadn't been in television beforehand, it was a new sort of opportunity for you, so it was a good thing, but also it's a really well-known programme.
It is. You know what? I have to say, honestly, hand on my heart, the first one wasn't that daunting. I just think I felt quite relaxed because I thought no one really expects me to be very good, perhaps, because I'm a young journalist. Perhaps a lot of people didn't know who I was. So I thought, well, the expectations aren't that high on me because I'm not a well-known person. So I just went in there and I enjoyed the show. I took it as a kind of a chat between four journalists. And that kind of helped me. But then I suppose the more I went on it, the more I started to think more about how I was being kind of, taken by fans. But I think the key thing is just to do your best and say what you know and what you believe. And hopefully people are receptive to it.
Obviously, the world has changed exponentially in the last 10, 15 years in terms of especially sports journalism and the amount of women in sports journalism roles. I mean, when I first started, there were a handful of sports journalists that were women, but there's a lot more now. The doors have opened. How easy did you find it, being a woman, being an Asian woman, to break into sports journalism? And has that been harder for you, do you think, or easier for you over the last couple of years? How do you think that played a part in your career?
It was interesting because when I first did my first internship with BBC Sport and then I went on to do internships with other newspapers, I never once thought about me being a woman. I've never really identified myself as I'm a woman and I'm from an ethnic background and I'm going into this press box. I just always thought about me being
I'm a sports journalist.
Yeah, I've never thought how will it affect me. I suppose I did notice it quite early on when other people reacted to me, eyebrows raised, oh, who's this? I don't know if that was me being a woman coming into a press box
Or a new face.
But those were the moments when I thought, perhaps, is it because I'm a woman or not? I've been quite lucky and fortunate. I haven't had too many negative experiences from, fans to editors to fellow colleagues. There have been a few, and they've all been because I've been a woman. It's just comments made. And I think that's what you are sometimes when you're a bit, sometimes you're caught overcautious. You're sometimes too ready to kind of react to any comment because you're always wary that someone could be being sexist, even though perhaps they might not be. I've had one or two sexist comments made to me. But fortunately, it's only been a handful. And I've had overall a really good experience. So I haven't really felt that it's gone against me. I feel like sometimes with players it actually works in your favour. Perhaps they feel they can talk to you a bit more easily than they might talk to, I don't know, a man. Because I'm from an ethnic background and I speak several languages, I find that that actually helps me with foreign players, because they feel that maybe they can connect with you better than if I wasn't from my background and spoke Spanish and French. So it's been an interesting ride, but fortunately it's been an overall more positive one than a negative one.
Well, what I hope is that, you know, really, and I think this should be the case, is the fact that people react to you and are more happy to speak to you because you can speak several languages. Yeah. And that's a talent. And that talent is the thing that gives you access. And I think that, I do hope that the press box itself has become more welcoming to everybody. Mm-hmm. But I know what you mean. Sometimes you get negative criticism, and we all do it, whatever, wherever we're from, whatever. You get negative criticism, and the first thing you think is why is someone saying that? Don't you?
Yeah.
But the one thing I suppose we all have to face up to, and I got some tonight, is that we all get negative criticism,
yeah,
don't
no,
we?
Absolutely. And I think with me, I've never been one to think straight away, oh, is it because I'm a woman or an ethnic minority background, from an ethnic minority background? It's always been just, oh, is it because of what I've said before? Is it not, you know, been based on fact or whatever? So I've never really focused in on that. I've just kind of gone in and done my own thing.
What was your most high-profile interview that you've done?
I talked to Cristiano Ronaldo.
Mm. Yeah. That is a good one.
It was. It wasn't for very long. But being a massive fan of his, that was, for me, a kind of a highlight moment in my career. So, yeah, I think I'd say that one.
And what was he like to interview? I've only spoken to him a couple of times, and the first time I saw him, he was watching himself back on a big screen and then almost sort of applauding himself and saying, oh, yeah, that was very good.
Do you know what? He was very nice. It was, to be fair, at an event where he was promoting basically his movie, so he would be. But I did actually ask him quite a controversial question. It was a question about whether or not the Ballon d'Or promoted selfishness in players, because Arsene Wenger had said that the week before. And he was a bit, don't like that question. But he answered it very well. So, he was quite nice.
You cover Chelsea on a regular basis for the Evening Standard. That's your main patch. How have you found them this season? And we'll talk about this game in just a moment, because we've been at Chelsea-Tottenham, or Tottenham-Chelsea, today. How have you found them under Maurizio Sarri?
I think the pressure was lifted as soon as Sarri came, and I just think it had become so negative under Antonio Conte last season that I think any managerial change would have brought a lift. But I think Sarri's, the way that he kind of eased on in, you know, he gave the players back mayonnaise in the canteen and salt and things like that, I think it really impacted the players really well. Of course, they had that unbeaten start to the season until they met Spurs. And I think they've reacted really positively. I do think there are issues there within that squad. I think the way that they want to play in terms of on the front foot, it works if Jorginho can control midfield. But if he can't control it, you need everyone to defend well. If they don't all defend well, you get a performance like against Spurs, which was a disaster, as Maurizio Sarri said.
And it was a disaster. And you and I were both at that game. Jorginho was cut out of the game by Dele Alli, who sat on him, and that was it. Chelsea had nowhere to go. They defended terribly, absolutely terribly. But afterwards, I thought it was really interesting that he called the players out over their attitude.
Yeah, from what I've seen in training, and this has basically been taken as positive because they've been unbeaten, is that the kind of relaxed attitude has helped them perform well. But I think the fact that Sarri said that there were problems evident to him before this game shows that perhaps he thinks there's too much of a lax attitude in that dressing room, and they didn't actually think that. I think perhaps they thought it'd be too easier than it was. Of course, they beat Tottenham, didn't they, in this fixture last season, so perhaps they thought they could stroll to Wembley, amid some of the issues around Spurs, particularly off the field, and get a win, but they couldn't.
In terms of what you want to do going forward, do you have like a plan for your career? Do you have a destination where you want to go? Do you want to be the first female presenter, regular presenter of Match of the Day? Or what is it you want to achieve?
I've never really thought about a particular sort of end aim, like I'd like, you know, presenting Match of the Day. But I think I'm happy kind of working across all sort of media platforms. I definitely think broadcasting is something I want to explore more and do more of, because I really do enjoy it. But at the moment, I quite like the mix of being that kind of reporter with the traditional kind of match reporting duties and going to the mix zone and fighting for interviews, but also doing the kind of snazzy
nice sort of Premier League shows and Sunday Supplement as well.
Back in the day, the idea of working for a newspaper very much was like, you know, having to deal with an editor who was quite demanding and on your case. I mean, for people who are just coming into the industry, is it still very much the same? Do you get those barking phone calls saying, Bashali, I need you to give me 500 words on this or 10 pars on that?
I'm glad to say it's not like that, the Evening Standard. There's a lot of freedom, particularly at the Evening Standard, in terms of how we can report, but also how we can change things to adjust to how people want to consume news now. And I think that's how my role and why my role has changed so much in the 4 years I've been there. It's because we do the traditional things, but then we see that fans like Periscopes before games, they like Facebook Lives after games, but then now they're liking short 1 minute videos after a game that we can use on the website. So we're responding to it quite well, and I'm quite open to doing new things. So thankfully I've got editors who are quite open to moving along with the time, and I guess evolving as the kind of our readership changes as well.
Right, remember you can tweet us or Instagram us on @AFCGeeks, and next we'll be giving you an insight how we get our tongues around some of the Premier League's and the Championship and League One and League Two's more challenging names.
They don't know how to make small talk, but they do know when Raheem Sterling last scored for England. This is All Football Commentators Are Geeks.
With the ever-increasing list of foreign players from all corners of the globe plying their trade in English football, getting the names right has become a real minefield for broadcasters, especially with the Twitter police ready to shoot us down if we get one wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, or even right in some cases. But you're spot on, Michelle. I was in the tunnel at the Vitality on Sunday when a Norwegian TV reporter, the same one who recommended the electronic socks, asked Nathan Ake how to correctly pronounce his name. And I was more than slightly taken aback when Ake replied that in Dutch, it's pronounced Nathan Ake. Sam, I know you're a stickler for getting these things right, and correctly so. But will you now start calling him Nathan, knowing you'll get pelters on social media?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know whether I'll do it yet, but I think it's one of those where it's been anglicised because he's been in an English academy and his mates have called him Nathan for so long, I think. But you're absolutely right. And I have, as the geekiest of geeks, prepared a presentation for you, because there is a website that is freely available for you should you choose to want to check all these names. It's local pronunciations from the country of origin. Not all players are on there, and occasionally there'll be one that you can't find. It's not perfect, but it's a best endeavours thing. And this is how I check them if I'm not sure. And I try to do it like this because, you know, we've come up with, in the last few years, a few names that people have struggled with. I know that you, in particular, seem to always get Milivojevic slightly tongue-twisted, don't you?
I did until you corrected it. I do have a thing with the Balkans players. For whatever reason, I keep trying to call Asmir Begovic Asmir Begovic. And I've done the same with Mitrovic at Fulham before. I just did it there. So that's probably one of my Achilles heels.
Okay, so here we go. Just to show that that Nathan or Nathan Ake is completely right about his own name, I've got this for you.
Nathan Ake.
Did you hear that?
Nathan Ake.
Yes.
There you go. Okay, so Nathan Ake. The one that irritates me the most, because he told me his name, and because I feel like a lot of people changed his name because it was easier and they didn't get confused with the then manager.
N'Golo Kanté. N'Golo Kanté.
One that's actually come up recently, and I don't know whether or not you've done this one yet, but I've heard it a number of completely different ways over the last few weeks. And that's the new fullback at Everton, who has been called Lucas or Luca, Dean or Digne.
Yeah,
here's the local.
Yeah, what is it?
Luca Digne.
Luca Digne.
It is Digne. Oh. Yeah.
Luca Digne.
I knew it was.
I've been getting that one right, actually. That's what I have got right.
I've been told it was Dean. Yeah, I've been hearing that over the course of the weekend, but apparently it is
Luca Digne.
There we are.
See, that's fascinating.
Any more for me that you want to just throw at me and I'll see if I can find them?
Can we get a definitive pronunciation on Kevin De Bruyne? Do you remember that season when some commentators were calling him Kevin De Brown, Kevin De Browner, all sorts? Do you remember that?
Okay, I feel like I'm doing Dr. Fox's jukebox now, because I'm trying to find this pronunciation.
Have you got Spice Girls 2 Become 1?
The website, by the way, for those of you who want to use it, is called Forvo. So here is the definitive of Kevin De Bruyne, as I call him De Bruyne. I don't know what it actually is. I've never done this with Forvo, or if I have, I've forgotten it. So this is a moment of truth for me.
Kevin De Bruyne.
Ooh.
It is. is De Bruyne.
Wow.
Well, that's that. That's certainly.
What are you going to do now?
I'm going to have to go De Bruyne.
Kevin, this is how sad we are.
Yeah.
I find this really exciting.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And this is after I've checked Azpilicueta with him this week, and Arrizabalaga.
Arrizabalaga.
We could just call him Kepa, can't we?
No, you've got to call him Arrizabalaga.
Yeah, I agree.
But this is a big moment, this. I can't believe it. Oh,
Kevin De Bruyne.
Wow.
I'm sorry, I know it's not as high profile, but I need you to do another one, Sam. We could be here all night, but can you just do one more for me?
I want a Fox's original jukebox jingle before I go any further.
Why did the bloke saying De Bruyne sound like he's from Glasgow, by the way?
Well, he's not. He's from Belgium. It says it here. His name is Theodorn from... Actually, he's from the Netherlands. So here we go.
Yeah, sorry, look, just one more. The Brentford striker. There's so much discussion about how to pronounce his name. Now, I was told definitively a couple of years ago that it was Neil Maupay, but everyone now says Neil Maupay.
Okay. Here we go. The moment of truth. So what do you think it is?
Well, last game I said Maupay, but I'm convinced it's Maupay.
N'Golo Kanté.
No. That's not how you say it. I've been doing it wrong.
I think I may have pressed the wrong button there. Right, okay, I'm ready to go again. Sorry. Here we go. The moment of truth for you.
Nial Moupé.
Ah, it's a pay, not a pie.
Why is he French?
Nial Moupé.
Because he's from France.
Oh, because he's from France, yeah.
Most French people are from France. And most people from France classify themselves as French and speak it. So I probably think that's probably the reason. So yeah, that's Forvo, everybody. If you want to go and have a look at it, it is Forvo.com on your just normal website stuff, man. It's really easy to get involved in. But there you go. At Sky, what do they tell you to do?
Well, it's a little bit ambiguous, but the general rule is what Martin Tyler says, who is the lead commentator, is what we're all meant to say.
Yeah.
But then I always think, well, what if you would disagree with Martin Tyler? What if you hear someone else say it differently?
You can't disagree with Martin Tyler. Well, who do you think you are, Michelle Owen?
I know. I'm getting too big for my boots. But when I'm at every ground, and obviously it's a bit different when it's sort of Championship, League One, League Two, I usually ask the press officer. But sometimes even they're not sure.
Not if they're telling everybody it's Luca Dean.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
And Kevin De Bruyne. What is it? Kevin De Bruyne. Kevin De Bruyne.
De Bruyne. Kevin De Bruyne. Yeah.
I remember, Sam, when you and I worked on the Chelsea coverage for Smooth Radio, and I made, I didn't think it was a mistake at the time, but I called the owner, Roman Abramovich, as we have been over here for, what, best part of two decades?
I don't mean to sort of rub it in that you're a little bit older than you think you are, but when we did that, it was probably about 2000 and, what, 7, 8? So that's 10 years ago, man.
Yeah, but we still call him Roman Abramovich.
Correct. Even though it is?
Roman Abramovich.
It is Abramovich, yeah. And if you do Chelsea TV or anything like that, then they will insist that you call him Abramovich.
Really?
So why hasn't that caught on, do you think, in the wider consciousness?
I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? That it seems to be ignored by everybody. But yeah, they're pretty certain and that you have to call him Abramovich. And obviously, he's a watcher of that, and he's someone who's told them that this is how he wants it said. So maybe we should respect that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good what they do for the commentators in the Bundesliga, actually. And I don't know if they do this for TV commentators in the Premier League or not. Maybe you can tell us, Sam. But at the start of each season, the Bundesliga get each player to record their own name, and then they can send out the audio file to anyone who's covering it, which is a really good idea, isn't it?
It's a great idea.
At the start of each season, every Premier League team has to do a media day where they have their photos taken for the host broadcasters for the Premier League. So why at that point, as they walk off, say, can you just record into an iPhone, what is your name? It would be so simple, make everyone's life so much more straightforward.
Do you think anyone really cares that much, though? Do you think the audience at home care, or is it just
us? I think they do. Do you know what? I get the most stick on Twitter when I pronounce a name correctly, but because it's unusual. So, for example, if I did say Roman Abramovich, I'd get pelters for that because, don't be stupid, it's Abramovich, isn't it? But no, actually, it's not. And also, it does matter to some players because, again, covering Southampton for a number of years, Jose Font was quite happy all the time there in the Championship and League One that commentators called him Jose Fonte. It was only when they got into the Premier League, they actually said, actually, guys, my name's Font.
Interestingly, though, I think you do have a point on that, that. Some of the funniest quirks you get on Twitter are people reacting to the way you pronounce a name. Like, people give me so much stick about Afpilicueta and N'Golo Conte because they're convinced. Some guy said to me, why do you keep calling him Conte? And I said, well, that's because he's French and that's his name. And he said, yeah, but my mate down the pub says, and all my mates say, Kante. And I went, oh, well, your mates down the pub are probably right then, pal. Rather than the geezer himself, who actually said to me, it's
N'Golo Conte. Sarky Sam.
Yeah, that was a bit sarky, wasn't it? We should do this every week. This should be a feature. This week's name in question is, and then you can just sort of send it to us and we'll try and get it pronounced properly for you. That sounds like a very good idea going forward.
Definitely.
Oh, we need to get out more. Right, that is just about it for this week. We hope you enjoyed listening and may even have learned a few things. I know I now know how to say Kevin De Bruyne. And we'll be back next week with another special guest.
Tweet the Geeks at AFC Geeks or get in touch on Instagram.